There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
So we come to the final hour of the week here on The Agenda. And as always, we turn our attention to making tracks. This is our opportunity to welcome into the studio leaders from a variety of industries here in the UAE who have made tracks here to Dubai and the UAE, continue to make tracks here through their chosen art and their chosen skills, and leave something of a legacy as well as they help to identify themselves with excellence here in the region. Today we turn our attention to the world, the very competitive world of food and beverage, an industry in which you really do need to shine in order to stick out. And well, our guest today has done exactly that. He's an award-winning chef and restaurateur. Born and bred in the north, in the very north of England, he travelled south to pursue his culinary ambitions, where he trained under one of the best. Then in 2010, he got the opportunity to come to the UAE to continue those skills, where just about everything he has touched has turned to gold, certainly in terms of awards. Since 2010, he and his close working partner have picked up awards left, right and centre, be they from Time Out, What's On, Caterer, Hotelier, BBC Good Food or others. For both their food and their venues, they're seen as creative, they're seen as a breath of fresh air, and they're seen as real developers of food and beverage here in the industry and here in Dubai. In fact, they were just last year crowned as Chefs of the Year, What's On Awards, and for good reason. In association with Nick Alves, our special guest today has been integral to propelling the UAE's status as a foodie destination. And he is one of the brains behind some of the hottest tables in town. It is a warm welcome to Making Tracks, the one and only Scott Price. Pricey, good to have you on board. Thanks very much indeed for choosing to do Making Tracks with us.
Good afternoon. I'm actually blushing.
Don't blush. Don't blush. You deserve all the praise you get. We know your name. Scott Price, award-winning chef and restaurateur here in the UAE. Where are you from, Scott?
It's a long story. I was born in Shrewsbury in Shropshire in 1981. In case you're interested, my dad is from Llangollen in Wales. My mum is from Scotland in Gretna Green. So I've always thought if I was any good at football, then I would have had a bit of a choice. I moved up to Gretna Green when I was 2 years old. That's where my mum's from. And I don't live there now, but that's where my home is.
Yeah.
I went to school there, Gretna Green, well, Springfield Primary School. It's a tiny wee village on the borders, essentially, but it's kind of world famous. Everybody seems to know where Gretna Green is. You know, it's people used to run away for marriages. Apparently, I think it was you could get married in Scotland when you were 16 instead of 18 in England, so people would elope. And it's for some reason a tourist attraction. I've never quite worked out why, but it was always busy for a small village, and that kind of bred hotels and restaurants to support the business around there. And that's why my mum, funnily enough, used to be a kind of a restaurant manager, a bar manager of the hotel across the road from where we used to live. Mm. That's why I started working in restaurants.
So you started, when would you say was your first day? I mean, we hear these stories about you, 11 years old, washing up and things like that. Is that true? Is that paint a picture?
Yeah, pretty much. Because I think I was quite comfortable with it because my mum was always there and I used to go up anyway and I knew the chefs and stuff. And then one day I said, well, you know, I wanted to just get a bit of extra money on the side, and she said, come up, I'll speak to the chef. And there was this crazy Irish guy called Steve, a small guy, loads of tattoos, and he was quite scary. I mean, when I was 11, I was only about 3.5 foot tall or something. So, and he said to me, I've got a job for you. I said, right. And he took me down the back stairs and put me into the essentially a tin shed. It was freezing cold where they used to have the walk-in fridge and had a potato rumbler. And I think for the first day there was cold running water and I rumbled potatoes for 8 hours without stopping. And I was just like, the radio was there, so I was like, okay, it's not that bad. And you know, it's, you know, probably winter in Scotland, so the water was freezing cold. You couldn't feel my hands, but you're just eyeing the potatoes, thousands of potatoes, 8 hours worth. The rumble is really loud, so it's just like, oh god, you know, it's not the nicest place to be, but I thought, you know, I'll stick it out. And it goes on, £1.35 an hour when I first started. And then I came back the next day and he was like, oh, don't worry, we'll get you in the kitchen tomorrow. So I came in all excited and then he stuck me back down for another 8 hours. And then the third day, he said, right, you can go in the kitchen today. I think his plan was, you know, you rumble potatoes for 2 days and then it's exciting when you get to actually wash dishes and then use hot water. So it worked. And I think I got in there and I felt comfortable in the kitchen. Mm. And now I look back on it and I think, yeah, I enjoyed the atmosphere, the buzz of the kitchen and the laugh. You know, it used to be a laugh as well. The staff used to have fun.
Kitchen is obviously something that comes naturally to you. We'll find out more about that. What about your growing up years, though, as well? Was it a happy household? Was it something that you took a lot from? What were the sort of values you took away from mum and dad that you look back on now as a father and say, oh, I learned from that?
They both worked hard. They both worked a lot. I think that was the time and the place of how it was. My dad was a truck driver for Eddie Stobbetts, and he used to drive coaches. He used to drive down to the Man United games when I was a kid, so I used to get to go down to Old Trafford quite a lot, which was good from a very young age. So that obviously got me into football, and well, I'm a United fan now, for good or for bad, but I've had a lot of good years, so I'm not going to complain about it. And my mum was essentially a bar manager, a restaurant manager. But in terms of music, it was always because my cousins used to live down in a place called Whitchurch in Cheshire, Shropshire. We used to go down there a lot at the weekends, so there was always a lot of music in the car. I remember 8 tracks, and then it went in cassettes. Mm. I used to have a big blue Granada. It was always Elvis, Michael Jackson for my mum. I was just obsessed with Elvis and then Michael Jackson. So wherever I went, I think to be honest, when I was probably that far from being called Elvis. I think her sister talked her out of it, which would have made my life quite interesting, I think. But Elvis and Michael Jackson from my mum's side, and then my dad, he used to listen to a lot of Genesis, which, you know, is all right, and Queen as well, and Chicago, which I can't actually remember any of the songs, but I just remember it being on all the time.
So this is going to be intriguing, because this is when we get you to choose, we ask you to choose four songs that are significant and personal to you, sonic signposts, if you like, along the path that you've charted to date. So with that in mind, Elvis Price, or would have been Elvis Price, yeah. What is your first song of Making Tracks?
Well, if I can put a little bit of backstory behind it, if you don't mind, there's basically, that was my mum and dad, so I kind of, being a typical kid, teenager, I went against that. And there was me and my two mates lived in my village, and my mate's dad was like a proper rocker. You know, there was the Mods and the Rockers, and he was a rocker. And every time I used to go around to his house, he'd always have, you know, Led Zeppelin, The Who, The Stones, The Doors, Hendrix, all the time. And I walked around and I was like, this is where I'm at. You know, even though I was like 12, 13 years old, and we just used to sit in his house and listen to music all day long, and it got me into the other stuff. So, and then after that, you know, I got into the Beatles and Bob Dylan, which I still love to this day. If you go into, you know, Folly, the restaurant, you know, Nick and I have probably 3 playlists, and one of them is more mine than his, but it's a lot of the records are still on there because I just love them, and I think that why can't you play your own music in your own restaurant? but the first song is Hurricane by Bob Dylan, because I just, when I first listened to Dylan, it's like, it's storytelling, it's imagination, and you just kind of get lost in what's going on. You can imagine being there and hearing these stories. There's other songs as well, obviously, but it's just, even when you listen to it now, it's just amazing. And I don't think everybody really gets Bob Dylan, but it's every time I put it on, I forget whatever else is going on. It's just the epitome of a songwriter.
Pistol shots ring out in a barroom night. Enter Betty Valentine from the upper hall. She sees a bartender in a pool of blood. Cries out, my God, they've killed them all. Here comes the story of the hurricane. The man the authorities came to blame for something that he never done. Put in a prison cell, but one time he could have been the champion of the world. Petty C and another man named Bello moving around mysteriously.
up out of town. Ruben Carlo and a couple of friends are driving around. Number one contender for the middleweight crown. Had no idea what kind of show they're about to go down. When a cop pulled him over to the side of the road, just like the time before and the time before that. In Patterson, that's just the way things go. If you're black, you might as well not show up on the street, unless you wanna draw the heat. Alfred Bellow had a partner and he had a rap for the cops. Him and other Dexter Bradley were just out prowling around. He said, I saw two men running out who looked like middleweights. Jumped into a white car without a state plate. Patty Valentine just nodded her head. Cops said, wait a minute, boys, this one's not dead. So they took him to the infirmary, and though this man could hardly see, they told him he could identify the guilty man. Four in the morning in a hall room, and the wounded man looks up to his one dying eye. See, why'd you bring him in here, boy? He ain't the guy. Here's the story of the hurricane, the man the authorities came to blame for something that he never done. Put in a prison cell, but one time he could have been the champion of the world.
I'm in conversation with Chef Scott Price. We've spoken a lot, Pricey, about your, you know, your background, your family, the early days of work as well. Seems that they instilled, your parents instilled that ethic of hard work into you as well. You took to that like a duck to water from 11 years old, as you were just saying there. What about school? Were you a model student at school?
I went to school.
Was it not for you?
No, I don't know. I don't know. I mean, I didn't really have a plan. You know, I look at it now. My wife's like a 5A star university graduate, and I'm like, I just went to school, and then I went to catering college, and that was it, basically.
Did you enjoy school?
It was all right. I went to school in a place called Annan Academy. It's in Dumfriesshire. It's about 10 miles into Scotland. I wouldn't want to say it's a rough school, but it was. So you kind of keep your head down, and I'm not going into stories about that place. But, I was lucky to have some good friends that kept me safe because I was only small, but it was what it was. And then when I got to 16, I left and went to catering college.
So you'd been getting the sort of hands-on experience, literally hands-on experience, washing dishes in town's local hotels, etc. Yeah. You've been doing school on the side. 16 comes. So had that sort of prompted you to go, you know what, culinary college? That's the way I want to go.
Yeah, well, I think I've probably skipped quite a lot, actually. I should have talked about. When I think between the ages of what, you go to secondary school when you're about 11.
Yep.
So music, when I was 11, it's really random. I used to listen to, obviously, you know, all of the rock stuff, but it was such a, I don't know, in my small village, such an eclectic, I think people were so bored, you just listen to anything. I used to listen to stuff like hip-hop and rap and Tupac and Snoop and all this stuff, which I still like now, but it was just this like little phase I went through. Again, I was around at my mate's house and we just sat on his bed listening to music, and he said, oh, I've got this tape, listen to this. And he put it on and we listened to it probably back to back for about an hour and just thinking, wow, this is amazing. And it was Wonderwall by Oasis. And there's something I'm so happy I grew up in, because I was meant to live in that era. I had long, messy hair, I had flares, and I loved it. And it was, you know, there's Pulp, there's Paul Weller, Oasis, Blur, you know, Primal Scream, and those, all of those amazing bands. And I used to go and see them as much as I could.
So were they having more of an influence on you than food? Did you want to, well, I suppose what I'm asking is, did we lose you, were we almost about to lose you to music?
Pretty much. I think when I moved down to London, me and my mate used to play, and I honestly felt to myself when I was moving down to London, I was giving up on my music career. obviously that wasn't true, but I felt like that's it. This is it. That's never going to happen.
So music's playing a formative role in between. You're sort of trying to work out what do I want to do with my life, what I'm going to do with my life. Culinary College sort of fit the bill for you.
Yeah.
Was that far away or not?
Funnily enough, I went to Culinary College in Carlisle
right.
Technology.
Yep.
So it's just across the border, yep. Scotland to England. And I started there. I was still washing dishes as a pot wash at my mum's. It was called the Anvil Inn in the Lover's Leap in Gretna Green. And luckily, well, funnily, the head chef at the restaurant was the lecturer at college. So he used to teach me from when I was a little age. And by the time I went to college, I was pretty good with a knife and I was pretty confident with cooking because he showed me the correct way from when I was really young. And I didn't realise. So when I started at college, I was just like, it was just for me, it was the next step. He said to me, let's go and, you know, go and have a few days there and see what you think. It was something, I don't know, this next step. And I never thought about doing anything else. When I looked and I talked to my friends, they were like, you're so lucky, you know what you want to do. I just, afterwards, obviously, a few years later, and I never thought because it was just a natural progression of.
Did work come easily, experience come easily straight after culinary college?
Yeah, I started college full time for the first year. And then they started this thing called a modern apprenticeship. Which I didn't really know anything about. And then basically they said to me, you do 5 days a week at work and 1 day at college. And I was doing 5 days at college. I was like, it's pretty boring, to be honest. And then as soon as they said that, the lecturer, one of the teachers offered me a job. And he said, I'll take it to show you where it is. It's just a place called, a little village called Wetherall, about, you know, 5 miles outside Carlisle. A nice little village. And it had a restaurant that had a one rosette, and I didn't really know what rosettes were when I was that age. But I thought, let's go and have a look. And obviously I'd been washing dishes in a hotel for 5 years, and then I went to this place and I was like, wow, everything's fresh, they've got a herb garden, and I was like, you know, I can cook here. And then started working at the Crown Hotel in Wetherall. I went into work one day and the receptionist said, oh, Liam Gallagher's just checked in. I was like, no way has he. And Paul Weller was staying in the hotel because he was playing in Carlisle, and I couldn't get a ticket. And I remember, and I went out into the afternoon, I went to the cinema with one of my mates, and I came back, and she said, oh, it wasn't Liam Gallagher, I got it wrong, it was Noel Gallagher. And I was like, you're having a laugh, no way, is Noel Gallagher in the hotel. And then I was even more gutted that I couldn't get a ticket, because the guy was like a working class hero, and I could relate so much to him at that time in my life, and I couldn't believe he was in the hotel. So I waited in the bar, an hour bar, there was the private bar, and there was our bar, and I waited until it was like 11 o'clock and they said, oh, you've got to leave. But because I worked in the hotel, they let me go into the private bar. I sat in the private bar for ages, just like, you know, itching. And him and Paul Weller came in and I couldn't believe it. And I got a picture with Paul Weller and I asked Noel for a picture and he said no. And it still upsets me to this day. I got a signed album. So, you know, I've got it on the wall still.
So when the move down south, when did that happen?
I was at the Crown for about 3.5 years, and then just before I left college, because I was still doing 1 day a week, which it was kind of here and there, I'd moved to like sous chef of the restaurant when I was like 19. Basically, I'd got a new lecturer at college, and he offered me a job again, but it was in the Lake District in Ullswater, and I went up to a look, and it was just on such another level. I mean, I thought, you know, you're 19, you're cocky, you think you can cook, and then I went up there, and I was like, oh my God, this is amazing. The everything was fresh. The Lake District is just like, you know, it's in Cumbria, it's beautiful. Everything's fresh within, you know, 10, 20 mile radius. The qualities, everything has such a provenance. The mushrooms, whatever you want to buy, or everything is there around you. And the standards of cooking were just on a different level. And my head chef there was Andrew McGeorge, who put me through the mill for a few years. He offered me a job. I thought, right, let's go. And I wanted to really focus. When I was 19, that was it. I was like, if I'm going to do this, I want to see if I can be good at it. And he started putting me forward to competitions. And after about a year and a half, I was there. So I'd have been at 21. There was a thing called the Gordon Ramsay Scholarship, a competition between the UK and Ireland. So he entered me into it, and I got entered into the Scottish heats because I was on the borders. So I went up to Scotland with him, just me and him in the car, and I think our ice cream machine and whatever. And I'd never done any kind of cooking competitions before. And I'd watched Gordon on TV on Boiling Point, and I was like, I was aware of who he was, and I was quite interested because I'm, you know, it's like if you want to be good at something, you've got to work with some people that are good. You're never going to be good unless you work with good people, especially chefs, you know, things like that. Me and my head chef Andy went up to Glasgow into his restaurant there, and I just remember sitting there, and there was like 5 other chefs of really good restaurants, and I was like, no way. I wrote myself off instantly. There's no way I'm going to do this. And then sat there waiting for Gordon to arrive, and I remember just this big booming voice coming through the door and I was like, oh my God, what am I doing? And he's like, just calm down, don't worry, you need to cook. I think it was like 2 dishes from a piece of paper in 2.5 hours. my head chef was just like, keep it simple, do this, do that. I was like, right, right. And then you go into another room and they give you a list of piece of paper, and then 2.5 hours later you have to do, you know, a start and a main course for 4 people or whatever. But it wasn't that that really frightened me. It's just when I went into the kitchen, there was like 20 film crew and cameras, and they were all like in your face with Gordon being there, and it was just so surreal.
Yeah.
After we'd finished, we all went round and we all got like a runners up plate, and he said, oh, I'm going to give one of you the winner's plate. So I sat there thinking, there's just no way it's going to be me. And then he read my name out as the winner, and I fell off my chair. I really almost, and my head chef went mad, shouting like, yes. And it was just a bit of an out of body experience for me. He stood me up and he put his arm around me and he said, oh, you're shaking. I said, oh, no, just whatever. And he said, I'll see you in London. And that was it. And
that
then
paved the way, did it? Listen, I'm going to interrupt for some music, because so many great stories, so much to find out as well. But what about the music as well? What's your second tune?
I think at that time of my life, it has to be an Oasis song. You know, there's so many good tunes about that, but it has to be Live Forever.
Maybe I don't really want to know how your garden grows, 'cause I just want to fly. Lately, did you ever feel the pain in the morning rain? I just soaked you to the bone. Well, maybe I just want to fly. Want to live but don't want to die. Maybe I just want to breathe. Maybe I just don't believe. Maybe you're the same as me. We see things I'll never see.
You and I are gonna live forever.
I said maybe
This is Making Tracks here on The Agenda. It's a Thursday afternoon on Dubai Eye 103.8. My guest today is the award-winning chef here in the UAE, Scott Price. We've just travelled to the point that you meet Gordon Ramsay, a man who would have a significant impact on your professional career as well. You won the competition, Pricey. And did you therefore have to go down to London with him? Was there an offer on the table?
No, it was like a quarter final or semi final. So basically, there was one person from England, Ireland, Wales, and Scotland that won the heat, and then we all went down to London for the grand final. And then that for me, it was just, I thought, well, I'll just go and see what happens. I totally ripped myself off and just went to enjoy it, basically. You know, I went for dinner at restaurant Gordon Ramsay's, 3 Michelin star, my mum, my head chef, and my mate. We all went for dinner the night before, which in hindsight probably wasn't a good idea before the cooking competition. But it was so tight. But I'd only been to London once before, so it was really exciting. And then, you know, we got treated like, you know, like celebrities for the day. They will get taxis around to the hotels, and we all got put up in a nice hotel and all those different things. Then I arrived at I think it was Westminster College, Kingsway College. You had to cook a 3-course meal for four people in like 3.5 hours from a blank piece of paper. So you didn't know what you were walking into. And it was hard. And I remember just when I'd wrote my recipes and set my list of what I was going to do, and then all the judges walked in. And for me, living in the Lake District, each chef had 1 or 2 Michelin stars. All of Gordon's head chefs were there. I know Heston Blumenthal, mega famous chefs at the time. And I was just looking, thinking, I can't believe I'm off to cook for these guys. And they're coming around asking me questions, but it was such an amazing experience. Mm. And to have that sort of level of experience and criticism, I think, is you can look at it two ways. You can think it's horrible, or you can think, well, you can't pay for this kind of experience and feedback on dishes. So I cooked what I did, and I didn't win. They offered me a job afterwards, and I spent another year up in the restaurant in the Lakes because I didn't feel I'd learnt everything I wanted to there. I wanted to be sous chef before I left, so I stayed another year. I went down there when I felt I was ready, and I was more of an accomplished cook.
So what that leaves us, what, about six years or so before you get the offer from him to come out here to Dubai? You're working in some of his marquee restaurants down there, or?
2004, I moved down 19th of April 2004. I started work at Claridge's for Gordon. I still remember it vividly, being scared to death when I went in the back door. Thought, all right, I'll do 18 months. And I was there 6 years, pretty much. It was hard. I'm not going to lie to you. It was really, really hard. And it's not for everybody. I think you can have some sort of masochistic problem in yourself that you like the pressure, and you know, you like to see people not doing very well and succeed. I don't know. It's not for everybody. You need to have quite a strong mentality to get through the days there. But you learn. You know, and you know, I would not be doing what I wasn't doing now if I hadn't worked with Gordon for that time. But it wasn't just about cooking; it's about management, about how you handle staff, about how you run a business. And the longer I was there, the more senior I got. I used to work with him doing TV shows and books and photography, a lot of extracurricular stuff. On my day off, I'd go to his house and do a photo shoot. I'd just get up in the morning and go to the restaurant and pick up all the ingredients on my scooter, go around to his house in Wandsworth and set up for the photo shoots and carry on doing it, because I thought it was really interesting seeing the kind of the other side of the restaurant business. And you know, that's kind of where he makes his money now, and I've always just really enjoyed that side of it as well,
working with him, learning from him as well. Therefore, did you, when he offered you the gig over here in Dubai, or offered you the opportunity to come to Dubai, was there any sort of hesitation for you?
A little bit. I remember sat in his restaurant. It's three Michelin star restaurant Gordon Ramsay, and we were doing a menu tasting one day, and afterwards he said, oh, I need to speak to you. And my heart was like, you know, almost stopped beating when he said, I need to have a word. And then we sat down in the restaurant, me, him and his executive chef of the group, and he said, oh, how do you fancy Dubai? And I said, I need to go and have a look. I can't just change my life with my girlfriend and stuff. So we went over for New Year's, and it was 2009, 2010. Spent a week in the Hilton, Dubai Creek, and I loved it.
And did you know your longtime partner here, as a professional partner, not as a personal partner, but Nick Alves, who you worked with closely, did you know him before here, or was that a partnership that sort of started here?
No, Nick and I started working together in about 2005. Mm. Claridge's had, let's say, a high turnover rate of chefs when I was there. Nick and I worked together about 2.5 years. Now I think back, it's really strange, because he was probably the only person I ever spoke about quite regularly and talk about food and restaurants. And he's probably the only chef I've ever done that with. And it in hindsight, it's really strange because of what happened, obviously, in Dubai. But that was like 5 years later. So maybe it's like, I don't say meant to be, but you know, I've worked with thousands of chefs literally, and he's the only one I've ever discussed about having a restaurant with. So when in 2010, when I landed, I took over as executive chef of the hotel. I wasn't technically head chef of the restaurant. It was part of the bargain. So I had a lot more to do than just run the restaurant.
Yeah.
As soon as I seen I need somebody in there to run it, then it was like, well, I know Nick, and I rang Nick and said, what are you doing? He said, oh, I need a change. So would you fancy Dubai? And he just said yes and literally got on the plane.
You worked with him under the guidance again of Vare by Gordon Ramsay at Hilton down on the creek as well. When did the decision come between the two of you to go it alone?
We knew that Gordon was going to end the contract, and he'd been there 15 years or something like that. And Dubai, you know, Bird Dubai, Dera is not the centre of Dubai anymore. So I can see why it happened. And I think that I'd done 8 years for Gordon, and for me that was enough. It wasn't like I was sick of it or anything like that. I was just like, let's try something new. And this is a new opportunity. And literally the general manager of the hotel said, well, why don't you guys come up with something? Why not? And we'd had quite a good following, and the restaurant was doing really well. So that essentially Table 9 was born, and I think it was the start of 2011. And we just went for it. You know, there was no real thought other than let's just open a restaurant and see what happens and just do what we want to do. And it was really, I think once you start being your own boss, it's quite difficult to change it. I think it opened my eyes to being more creative in terms of more than just cooking and in terms of a whole experience in a restaurant. I think we've built on that. And then Folly further down the line is kind of something that we put together properly and structured in our own terms, right from a blank piece of paper, and that's what makes it special to us.
Bryce, we're going to get on to Folly in just a little while, but I need another song. I need song number three. What is it?
The song, obviously, I've been in Dubai nearly 10 years now. I didn't get married in Dubai, but I got married whilst living in Dubai, and if I don't say a song from anything to do with my wife, she's going to kill me. So the song is our first wedding song. It's Dancing in the Moonlight by Thin Lizzy.
When I passed you in the doorway, you took me with a glance. I should have took that last bus home, but I asked you for a dance. Now we go steady to the pictures. I always get chocolate stains on my pants. And my father, he's going crazy. He says I'm living in a trance. But I'm dancing in the moonlight. It's got me in its spotlight. Dancing in the moonlight on this long hot summer night. It's 3 o'clock in the morning and I'm on the streets again. I disobeyed another warning. I should have been in my tent. Now I won't get out till Sunday. I'll have to say I stayed with friends. It's a habit worth forming if it means to justify the end. Dancing in the moonlight, it's got me in its spotlight.
It's alright.
Dancing in the moonlight on this long hot summer night. And I'm walking home. The last bus is long gone, but I'm dancing in the moonlight.
I'm not.
listening to Making Tracks here on Dubai Island 3.8. It's the final segment. I'm in conversation with award-winning chef Scott Price, a man who's put his name to a number of award-winning ventures, along with his long-time collaborator, Nick Alves. Nick and Scott, Table 9 by Nick and Scott, The Taste Kitchen more recently. And the latest venture, Folly. You mentioned just before we went to the break there about Folly, more recently The Lion as well. What's special about this? Is this because you were involved from the outset, if you like?
Yeah, I think maybe 3 years ago, Nick and I made a serious decision that we're going to stay and you know, have a real go at doing something on our own. And when you work for somebody else, the decisions aren't always yours. And sometimes people come to you with offers or situations or let's work together, and you can't because your hands are tied. So we were like, okay, how can we get around that? So we set up our own business, started building it and designing it from scratch. There was Nick, myself and Victoria, our other business partner. And I think that to have something on a piece of paper and to bring it to life, it's a very scary thing, but and it's a lot of hard work. But now, even now, after almost 2 years, I stand in the restaurant at night when it's busy and the music's on and it's got a good vibe and the food's good and the drinks are good and the service is good. It's such a great sense of achievement.
It's been recognised by so many, as I said at the beginning of the intro, you know, so many awards for that and other ventures you guys have been involved in as well. If it ain't broken, why fix it? Is there that element that you just let a winning formula go, or do you always have to be thinking ahead in this market given how competitive it is?
Yeah, I think we're very proud of it, what we've done here, but Dubai moves so fast and it's so competitive. We've been open 18 months and, you know, we have a 5-year lease and we intend to stay there plus whatever, keep going. So we're constantly trying to evolve the food, evolve the drinks, you know, get the staff buying in, the team to for them to come up with ideas and things as well, and to move it forward. You know, we're now about to open the rooftop, which is kind of a Folly point too, if you want. We're a bit too scared last year when somebody said, let's put a DJ on the roof and let's do this. We was like, I'm not sure about that. But this year we've seen the kind of crowd that come, and we're trying to build on that and give it a new, freshen it up essentially, the rooftop gardens, and spend a little bit more money and keep it interesting as well. We and it keeps it interesting for us, you know, otherwise it does get a little bit, not that we find it boring, but you want to keep it good for yourself. You know, we're constantly looking at what's happening in London or New York or anywhere around the world for other ideas. I think, yeah, that's good, let's try that, and push things forward from the food. We have a lot of regular guests and you need to keep them interested, otherwise they'll go somewhere else.
That success has now been borne out to The Lion as well. Are there others in the pipeline? Don't want you to sort of spill the beans at the moment, but is that one of your things that you and Nick are always looking ahead?
Yeah, I think so. You know, that Folly is our baby. You know, we built it from nothing and it'll always be our baby, and we want to try other things, and if something comes along that we find interesting and is viable, then we're going to look at it. You throw a few things out there and some of them stick, some of them don't, and you have to keep working like that. I like coming up with those stupid ideas, Nick always tells me, and I like being creative and trying to put things, if somebody challenges me to do something, to come up with a new design or a new concept, and then we work together and try and say, well, let's try this or let's try that. So it depends. If the business comes where we'll look at it and make a decision. But yeah, you know, this is definitely not us stopping. I think we're just getting started, to be honest.
We talked about hard work from the beginning of this conversation, hard work that's instilled in you by your parents, hard work that you've continued through to this day as well. Talk to me about balance, if we can, as we wrap things up down here. Balance at work, first and foremost. How do you keep that balance of friendship with an Arsenal fan? friendship with a good mate, but also a business partner as well. Is it something you have to work at, both of you?
Yeah, I think we've both matured over the time. It's very natural. We both care about the same thing at the end of the day. We might have different
football teams.
Yeah. Yeah. We both care about the same thing, which is, you know, the guest experience and looking after people when they're in the venue. And we've both worked in the same stable. We come from the same background. We might have different points of view on how to get there. You know, this is us working together 10 years together answer. If you'd asked me 10 years ago, I'd just said, I've got no idea. It just happens, you know. We argue a lot, but it's for the right reasons. We care about the same thing. Mm. And I think between us nowadays, we kind of cover all the bases. You know, we've both grown in ways not more than just chefs. Mm. You know, the marketing, the advertising, the way things are, the confidence that we have to be able to create something out of nothing and know that it's going to work and be confident in all aspects of restaurant design or conceptual, that sort of thing. We're very confident now through the experience. I think that the experiences we had with Taste Kitchen and things like that led up to us doing things with Folly being right from the start. We've made mistakes because that's how you learn.
And finally, talk to me about balance at home. You know, we know that the industry that you work in demands long hours. You've got a wife who understands that because you mentioned, you know, she's been with you a long time. You moved here, so she understands that. But you're a dad now as well. How do you get that balance with work and home, given the demands on your time?
I think when you have a child, your priorities do change a little bit. Well, quite a lot. You know, it's just now, it's tough. You know, having your own business and having a family is really hard. And it is trying to, I think the first 6 months since my daughter was born was really hard, because you just don't know what you're doing, essentially. You know, there's no instruction book for a kid, and you're just tired and you make silly decisions, and you don't, you know. I'm so glad Nick was there for the first few months, because I had no idea what I was doing. I was that tired. In my days, I split my morning, so I go to work in the afternoons or early, you know, maybe 11:30, 12, and I'll spend the morning with my daughter and my wife, and then I'll go to work and do whatever I have to do. And I try, and now things are changing because the restaurant's a little bit more running and the team are better and stronger. So we are trying to, you know, have a little bit of life for ourselves, because, you know, you get to a point at our age, you can't just give everything to the job. There has to be a little bit of a life. So we are trying to adjust that now. It is difficult. It's tough. And I think that, you know, that seeing my daughter grow up is so important. Spending time with my wife and my daughter as much as I can is if I'm not at work, then that's what I'm doing.
And a bit of time for fishing along the way as well.
Football as well.
Football, fishing, everything else as well. Look, I could talk for another hour. Unfortunately, we're out of time. People can find out more about you by coming on down and tasting your food. I suppose that's the best place to come down, isn't it? Get down to Folly.
Definitely.
Come down to Folly. Have a little taste of the food. It's Folly by Nick and Scott. There's also the Lion at the H as well, amongst others. Find out more details online. Well, there is one more piece of business, Mr. Scott Price. That's for me to say a huge thanks for you for making tracks here to the UAE. Long may they continue. Thanks for agreeing to do this with us here on The Agenda. What's your final song, mate?
It's Heroes by David Bowie.
What better way to let out? Scott Price was making tracks here on Dubai I-103.8. Thank you.
there's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.